afternoon, everyone. The Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce that this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is customary with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Ms. Doyle, will you please take the roll?
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative McDonald. Representative Berg.
Present.
Sorry, Representative McDonald here.
McDonald present, Berg present. Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Greenman. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Sundin.
Present.
Representative Zhang. Representative Greenman. We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Doyle. Quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes from the March 16th, 2021 meeting. Every member should have received a copy of today's minutes in their inbox. Representative Detmer, did you get a chance to review the minutes?
I so did, Mr. Chair.
Representative Detmer moves approval of minutes from March 16th, 2021. Any comments or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Members, at some point, I'm going to have to step out because I have another obligation. It'll take a few minutes, so Representative Zhang will be taking over as soon as he gets here. First bill on the agenda is House File 1577 from Representative Kosnick. I will move that House File 1577 be re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee. Welcome, Representative Kosnick. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Eklund and committee members. House File 1577 is a bill that would require the Department of Labor and Industry to study the adequacy of benefits that are provided to our disabled and injured police officers. And with me, I have a constituent that has brought this issue to my attention, Wendy Wolf. And Mr. Chair, she can stand for questions and it's a brief presentation.
Ms. Wolf, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. My name is Wendy Wolf, and there is a PowerPoint that Grace was going to pull up and share with you while I talk. I can get going anyway, but I am here to speak in support of House File 1577. My husband, Dan Wolf, was the commander of the bomb squad for the city of Minneapolis, and he was injured by a blast in 2005 during a training exercise. He has a traumatic brain injury. He was very good at his job, wanted to do it for as long as he could, and it was cut short through no fault of his own. At the time he was injured, he was the highest ranking Asian officer on the department, and he was respected internationally for his work on the bomb squad. Next slide, please. After 2 years, we realized that there was a severe systemic problem, a structural problem with pension and work comp law, because up till then, we were able to have 100% of my husband's salary between work comp, sick time and pension benefits. But after 2 years, we got just his pension and there were no work comp benefits anymore because of a cap. We went from $72,000 a year as his income to $43,000 pretty much overnight. And I told Representative Holdberg and Senator Parisot about it, and they introduced a bill to try to increase pensions. And the Pension Commission increased just my husband's pension from 60% to 75% while they studied the overall issue to try to make a fix for all disabled police officers. Next slide, please. So that study never happened. And since then, some other things have changed. The Ekdahl-Hartwig decision was a Supreme Court decision that gave the work comp benefits back to police and fire members that were old enough to retire at the time they were injured, but it did nothing for younger retired officers like my husband. They also changed the COLA from 2.5% to 1% per year. So with salaries going up about 3% a year, we're falling farther and farther behind what my husband would have gotten. And they eliminated automatic survivor benefits. So when my husband turned 55, they took away 10% of his pension to cover the survivor benefits. So we lost 10 years of COLA in 1 year. Next slide, please. So there are different there are different offsets depending on your demographics, which is not the way things usually work. For people who are disabled but retrained to a new job, they go from they can have up to 125% of what the current salary is for that job before there's any offset. If you're not, if you go back to work, you obviously have 100% of your salary. But if you are unable to work at all, you get a maximum of 66% of your salary that's set on the date of injury with a cap based on statewide wages. Because of the Ekdahl decision, there is no offset for people who are permanently totally disabled after they reach normal retirement eligibility. Next slide, please. So this kind of puts it into perspective what happens in the different situations. So I used actual numbers from my husband's income at the time of injury and what his income would be now if he was still able to work, so that you can get an idea of the relative impact on injured workers and their families. Under the current system, if you are injured early in your career so catastrophically that you can never work again, you get the least help of anybody that gets injured, which I don't think is the intent that the legislature had, but because of a bunch of different decisions over the years, that's how it works. Next slide, please. It's very, very few people that this happens to. It happened, I'm sure, before us, because it's the loophole started in 1993, but nobody said anything until I brought it up in 2008. So it hasn't been fixed. And then because the study never happened, we've not been able to have any legislation to fix the loophole. Next slide, please. So what we're asking for today is just to have the study that was agreed to back in 2008. And it needs both work comp and para to work on it because of the interplay between the two issues. And it becomes increasingly important because we now have Eric Mattson severely injured and probably going to face that same loophole that we fell through. And the longer this goes on, the harder it is to fix the problem. Next slide, please. I've been told to be brief, so I left out a lot of the details, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you or your members may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf, for your testimony. At this point in time, I'm going to pass the gavel over to Vice Chair Zhang so I can go to my other appointment. So Vice Chair Zhang will take over on questions, and I'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Members, any questions or comments on the bill? Seeing no further comments, Representative Koznick, any final remarks?
Thank you, Chair Zhang and committee members. As you briefly heard, we try to respect your time, but there is a gap in the pension system, and this bill will hopefully identify and formally recognize that gap so that we can fill in that broken part of the system and allow our officers that are permanently totally injured through obviously no fault of their own, especially when they're young in their career, to receive the benefits that we would honor them for their service. And to I appreciate my constituent, Mrs. Wolf, for bringing this to light for other officers that may experience and fall through this through the system here. So looks like there are maybe some committee member questions now, but I would encourage and appreciate your support.
Yes, Representative McDonald. Oh, you're muted.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. Representative Kosnick, thank you for bringing this bill forward and the fact that the bill was brought to you by a constituent. I think that as we all are legislators, we can all appreciate a great idea and a problem in the system that is brought to us by our constituents. And it just is a wonderful opportunity to be able to fix something that's broken. So I appreciate that and your work on that. And Ms. Wolf, I appreciate your testimony and my sympathies on your family as well. But a question for Representative Kosnick as to how many folks does this affect at this point? Is there a number of how many those who have been injured in the line of duty that didn't cover?
Representative Kosnick?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative McDonald. That's a good question, and part of the reason why what the study would be important. It's our understanding that it would be very few that are actually injured at the early part of their career, so that if they're permanently totally disabled, they're not able to work elsewhere, and we want to make sure that their benefits recognize the service that they provided. You know, a young officer or a new officer on day one puts their life on the line for their community. And so hopefully this bill, after the study, recognizes and the Pension Commission would recognize that we need to address this issue so that they are adequately compensated for putting their life and their family in danger.
Any follow-up, Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last thing, Representative Kosnick. It also includes the firemen and women, correct?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. The Zoom, we always get out of turn here. The way the bill is written right now is just for police, but it could be fire as well, and the Pension Commission could recognize that through the study.
Any Representative McDonald?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Appreciate your answer, and good to see you wearing an orange tie in honor of St. Patrick's Day.
Representative Byrd?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, because I do sit on the Pension Commission, and this is a subject that's come up that we've heard testimony on. And so just so that I could have a better understanding of it, so that when we vote on it or take any action, I want to make sure that I understand it and am the best advocate for it. So I went to some sources and asked the questions. They were union members, asked them to explain sort of what their pensions look like and what their system is and what do you think about this particular subject. And the pushback that I got, you know, wasn't necessarily that, you know, nobody wants a police officer or a firefighter who is injured in the job to struggle for the rest of their lives. The pushback was, you know, how this person pays into the pension fund for a few years, and then the responsibility for the rest of their life falls on the current members to continue to put money into the fund for those members, which, you know, some members don't mind and others do. So thoughts on that sort of pushback?
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Representative Berg. I think my thoughts would first go that, as I mentioned earlier, on the very first call that an officer or other first responders might go on, there's the same amount of risk, whether it's on the first day of their call or on the last day before retirement. And so when they put their lives in that harm's way, I think we owe it to them to adequately compensate them for that service. My testifier may have a little bit more detail on the complexities of how that works, but it's a good question and one of the reasons why the study would be able to more articulately lay out the gap in the pension systems and the different benefits that I received and to make sure that they're adequate as the bill as states.
Representative Berg, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I was just basically looking for thoughts on that piece of it. I agree with you, having been married to a police officer. I hear you, and I appreciate that it's just as dangerous the first call to the last call. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. As I sit on the pension commission and try to make decisions there, discussions like this are very helpful, so thank you.
All right, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick?
I'm not sure if my testifier might be able to more.
Yes, I was just about to call caller. Ms. Wolf?
Thank you.
Do you have a response for?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. It's not just the pension, it's pension and work comp together. The legislature over the years has passed a variety of laws that have ended up that if you are injured early in your career and are and severely injured where you can never work again, all you get is your pension. And it's a smaller pension than what you would get if you were able to make it to the end of your career. Had my husband retired at age 55, he would have had a pension that was over $100,000 and then been able to get another job. He was recruited by the FBI to teach at their bomb school whenever he decided to leave Minneapolis. So his pension, even with the increase that we were given by the 2008 pension bill, omnibus pension bill, is a little over a quarter of what he would have for income if he were healthy and had been able to retire healthy and get another job. I lost my ability to work full time as well because I'm his caregiver. I get $30 a day to take care of him and I'm able to work part time with that. But the overall thing between the pension and the work comp, you will be financially destroyed if you are injured early in your career, catastrophically injured and unable to work. That's the exact opposite of how it's represented to the members. And very few members know that this loophole exists. We didn't know until we fell through it. And people at first didn't even believe me when I was testifying back in 2008. They thought there's no way the law could be that bad where people who are severely injured get the least help. It couldn't possibly be that way. But it's continued to be that way for 13 more years because this study hasn't been done. It's a very, very few people. A few years ago, before the Ekdahl decision, they estimated that it was a little over 30 people, but some of those got their work comp benefits because of the Ekdahl decision. So it's even fewer than that that are actually impacted by this. But for the people who are impacted, it's absolutely devastating. We were at the point where the only way my family was going to be able to survive financially is if my husband died. And people think that when you have a brain injury, you know, you're just sort of don't know what's going on and you just sit around and don't worry about things. But that's not how it actually worked. My husband literally wanted to die to support our family. And thank it should you, never Ms. be like that.
Representative Nelson.
There we go. Mr. Chair and members, I'm listening to the testimony my understanding is part of this is the interplay with workers' comp and the worker comp law changes that were done in 1993, which put a cap on a 5-year cap on someone that's disabled being able to collect the disability, those workers' comp benefits. Am I correct in that, Representative Kosnick or Ms. Wolf?
Representative Kosnick or Ms. Wolf, if you can't answer that.
Yeah, I believe Ms. Wolf would be more versed in this, but I believe the answer is yes.
Ms. Wolf?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and thank you for the question. It absolutely is the case that 1993 made the cap on the number of years you could collect, but there's been changes since then so that after 2 years, if you have reached maximum medical improvement and are permanently totally disabled, you don't get any wage loss. There's a $25,000 lifetime cap. And we didn't actually get that $25,000 until several years later because of paperwork problems. But you're immediately at 2 years hit with a cap for your lifetime of $25,000 a year. You may or may not get it to begin with and then have it cut off when you get to $25,000. But you go from your full salary to 60% of your salary with a 1% increase for the rest of your life. Now imagine having that happen when you're 25, 30 years old and how far behind you're going to fall over all of those years.
Representative Nelson, any follow-up?
Yes, I just wanted to say that, yeah, it's the workers' comp law that is the problem here. I understand that construction field, we have people that get injured early in their career. And again, they reach that, the medical maximum improvement. And then when they hit that, that sets that time frame off and it just puts that cap in. So while this is, we're talking the police pension here, and they have some additional benefits that they have there, and they don't get Social Security. They don't pay into Social Security, so they don't qualify for Social Security benefits, which would, somebody would get filed for Social Security disability, but the police and fire don't pay into Social Security because of the vagaries of the way that their pensions are set up. So there is an issue here that needs to be looked at. The question is whether it's the pension fund, again, how the pension is going to be funded to pay for that. But I understand what the question here is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I will make the motion that House File 1577 be re-referred to State Government Finance. The Community Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund, aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Yes.
Zhang, aye. Representative Detmer.
Aye.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Berg, aye. Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Poston.
Aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin.
Aye.
Sundin, aye. There are 13 ayes, 0 nays.
There being 14 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and the bill is on its way. And I will hand over back to Chair Eklund.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1337 from Representative Lizegard. I will move that House File 1337 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Representative Lizegard, welcome back. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 1337 touches on an issue that we talk a lot about at the legislature in terms of getting more kids connected to strong careers in construction trades. I became aware of this unique partnership between Operating Engineers Local 49 and the Minnesota Virtual Academy to develop a pathway program for high school students who are interested in exploring a career in heavy equipment operation. This K-12 industry partnership has already shown incredible success in reaching students across the state. This bill is straightforward. It would make a $100,000 appropriation through the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry for Minnesota Virtual Academy to work directly with school districts to connect more students to this career pathway. This would be a pilot program, so we can assess the effectiveness of this partnership. We would require a report back to the legislature so we can consider if this model is worth pursuing more broadly. And with me today, I have two individuals that can testify in more detail regarding this partnership and pathway program.
Thank you, Representative Lizegard. First testifier is Leslie Lewandowski, College Readiness Program Coordinator, Minnesota Virtual Academy. Ms. Lewandowski, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. My name is Leslie Lewandowski, and I am the College Readiness Coordinator for Minnesota Virtual Academy, and very excited to be here today and share a little bit more about this pathway and the impact that it has on students at Minnesota Virtual Academy. And those students, as we will learn through this presentation, are students that are across our state. I do have a PowerPoint that I would like to share, and I will open that up now. Sorry, it's a short video in it that will be very helpful for our presentation. So as you can see, this is a partnership program between Minnesota Virtual Academy and Local 49, the Union of Operating Engineers. And it is offered to all students who enroll through Minnesota Virtual Academy. The best way to explain this pathway is through a short video that we have for you.
Are you in high school? Are you interested in taking elective classes that will show you what the industry is really like? Minnesota Virtual Academy and Local 49 have partnered up to offer you courses toward becoming an operating engineer. High school students can enroll online full or part-time at MNVA to access operating engineer courses as part of their traditional school day. This is available to any student grades 9 through 12 enrolled in a Minnesota school district. The program includes four semester courses that give an overview of skills needed to successfully navigate the requirements of the Local 49 apprenticeship program. You will learn construction exploration, basic grade in construction math, construction equipment fundamentals, and basic maintenance of mobile equipment. You can take these classes anywhere at any time, on your schedule at your convenience. The courses offered count towards your high school elective classes with potential for college credits. If this is right for you, you will be better prepared and ready to enter the Local 49 apprenticeship program, knowing your options for your future and potential in this diverse industry. If you decide not to become an operating engineer, that's okay too. You took the time to explore, learn, and discover what's out there. Click the link below and get enrolled today.
So as you saw from this video, it is a four-course sequence that we offer our students through Minnesota Virtual Academy. The first course in that sequence is a construction explorations course, which for some automatically think construction, then we think about building things. But the focus of this course is specifically on heavy equipment fundamentals and the different positions that are in that field. We move in then to a basic grade in construction math course, which has the potential to be aligned to Minnesota state standards and would allow students to receive math credit for it as well. And then the final two courses are basic construction equipment fundamentals, and then moving a little bit deeper into that area and maintenance of mobile equipment. What is important about these courses is that they are offered through a virtual platform. That was a very intentional move between Local 49 and MNVA in order to be able to outreach to any students in the state of Minnesota and to take away those barriers of access. But within that, there is very specific opportunities for live teaching that students are able to get through the instructors that are teaching the courses. And if for any reason students can't participate in those live sessions, they are also recorded so that they can come back and hear them later. And then the other component that is critical to what we are doing are the hands-on activities that have been developed in each course. And what we see is as we progress through the courses, those activities become more and more specific to the role of an operator in whatever position they may have. So within our basic just introductory course, what we offer is an opportunity to take a virtual field trip of the Local 49 Training Center in Hinckley, Minnesota. From there, we move into opportunities, and we're looking forward to some of the COVID restrictions being lifted. But we will be taking out simulators to multiple state places within the state, so students will be able to access those there, as well as kind of a capstone and final opportunity for our students to come to the training center in Hinckley as part of their final coursework that they have. One of the key things we want to share with you today is to share the growth that we have within this program. As you can see through these heat maps, we serve kids in all counties through Minnesota Virtual Academy. Specifically in this pathway, we started first semester with a pretty good footprint in the state for a first course being offered. But you can see the expansion that we've had into our second semester. We have 117 students registered currently, which over doubled the amount of students that we had. And we actually are in 39 counties that represent 66 school districts across the state. We are already fielding phone calls for the fall as students are registering for their next fall's courses. And so we know that this math is going to change again, and we will continue to see more counties and more school districts participating in the program. At this time, Chair Eklund, I would like to turn testimony over to my colleague, Jenny Winkler from Local 49.
Ms. Winkler, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Winkler. I am the Director of Workforce and Community Development for Operating Engineers Local 49. Appreciate your time today. I will be brief. Just want to talk a few minutes about the benefits for students that enter the program. I like to think of it as a 3-for-1 option. Students receive, of course, high school elective credit. They also receive articulated college credit for 3 of the 4 courses. And for those students that ultimately decide this is the career field for them, they also receive credit toward our registered apprenticeship program should they transition into that career field. This work is important for us at Local 49 as we think about our equity goals, both in terms of outreach and exposure, but also placement and retention. Being an operating engineer requires a high level of skill, which means it may require some additional preparation. Now, we feel that offering clear information to students at a younger age is critical, but particularly for students who may not have any current connections to anyone in the industry. This helps them make informed career choices early on so they can be intentional about course selections, obtaining driver's license, and sets them ultimately on a course for success. We are really proud to say that nearly 15% of the students in the initial cohort are female, and 7% of our current enrollments are students of color. At this time, I'd like to turn it back over to my colleague Leslie, just to touch on a few of the challenges that we've had in promoting this program that this bill seeks to address.
Ms. Lewandowski, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. So as we have rolled out this pathway and continue to grow, one of the main challenges that we have seen is the financial impact of this pathway on enrollment within the state of Minnesota. Students that enroll in the program become a shared time student, and part of their school allocation then is rerouted to Minnesota Virtual Academy to pay for the instructor and the course that's offered through there. This financial impact for some school districts in the state is something that prevents them from wanting to share out information on this or actively work against sharing information out against the pathway, even though it's in the best interest of students. So with this allocation that would be done through House File 1337 would allow school districts to support student participation that is in their best interest without having to have them choose between what to do and their bottom lines. This is critical work that we're doing, and I think one of the things I wish to highlight through all of this is about a partnership. This is about school and industry coming together to work together to be able to spread and pass on more information to our youth so that they have informed information to make informed decisions as they move towards graduation. This information, I believe, is in your packet. There are some links, one to the overview video that was in the slide deck, as well as to Local 49 and to the Stride Career Prep Program at MNVA. And at this time, we would like to open it up to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Lewandowski and Ms. Winkler, for your testimony. Member questions? Let me fix my screen here. Representative Detmer. You're muted, Representative Detmer.
You should know by now.
We all forget, no worries.
Yeah. I think this is a good bill. If you recall, Chair, that I have a bill, House File 198. It's sitting in education right now. I think it should have came to your committee like it has before, where schools, if they're going to have a college fair, that they also have to encourage and ask the different trades to come in during a college fair and set up tables and talk about the opportunities in the trades. Also the military recruiters, because there are schools out there that won't allow the trades or the recruiters from the academies or from the different military branches to come into their schools. So I think this, it would tie in really well with this bill. In terms of the 49s, I spent some time up at their training site and spent time on their heavy equipment. So it's a great opportunity for kids that want to try, men and women that want to try the trades like the 49ers. I encourage, Will, I see there's going to be a report to the legislature on this bill. And I think that we can add a lot to our opportunities that students have out of our schools today, because not everybody needs to go to a four-year college. And the trades right now, if you look at the trades, I think the average age of a tradesperson now is in the mid to upper 50s. So we're going to have to be looking at younger people to come into the trades and work. And there's some good paying jobs right now. I know if you want to be an electrician in Minnesota and you get an apprenticeship, you're getting paid, and also benefits. The starting salary for an electrician today in Minnesota, I think, is around $75,000 to $85,000, and no college loans. So I hope that we can go forward with this. Looking forward to see what those what the report might say with it when it comes back to the legislature. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Myself there and members, yeah, this is a good bill. And the only problem I have is that it's the 49ers and not the Carpenters. But all joking aside, no, it's a good bill. As Representative Detmer said, there's a lot of people that don't see themselves in a four-year college, don't see themselves in a sitting in an office someplace doing a job. This is a way that they can get some training or at least get a glimpse of what these trades are. It's unfortunate that with the past cuts to education budgets, that school districts, one of the things that they cut out first is the industrial arts programs that they have, because those are more costly than having an English teacher in a classroom. And that's where a lot of people get their experience or get some knowledge of those programs. And there is a great need for these people. And as Representative Detmer said, these people, they get paid while they're in the apprenticeship. And when they get done with their apprenticeship, they don't have a huge college loan that they have to pay off. And they're actually making good money all the way along the way. So this is a good program. I support this bill wholeheartedly.
Any other member questions? Members, I do as well support this bill. I think you heard from Representative Nelson that sometimes there's some little, like, to give the different trades groups a little bit of good-natured ribbing in between, just like the Marines and the Army, right, Representative Detmer? But we all have each other's back when it really, really means it. So Representative Lisgard, final comments on your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I heard Representative McDonald ask if somebody's wearing green, so I'm going to my office, and the only thing green that I had was a Workers for Wellstone button. So out of respect for you, Representative McDonald, I hurry up and put that on. So this is a good bill. It's it brings exposure, brings opportunity for individuals who may not otherwise have this opportunity. So thank you so much, and I hope you support it.
Thank you, Representative Liz Lagarde. I will renew my motion that House File 1337 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Bill is laid over. Next bill on the agenda is House File 1794. Representative Frederick, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File, 1794.
Representative Frederick moves that House File 1794 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Please explain your bill, and then we'll take up the amendment that was submitted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Helmets to Hard Hats bill is a pretty simplistic bill in that it's designed to support our veterans and get them into apprenticeship programs and provide them with further skills. The Helmets to Hard Hats program does a lot more than that, though. It also assists vets with mental health issues, assists vets with traumatic brain injuries, does a lot of suicide prevention work. So there's a lot of work that they do to assist our veteran community. So I would turn it over to the testifiers and let them kind of explain more about the bill.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. First testifier up is Gary Thaden, Construction Careers Foundation. Mr. Thaden, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gary Thaden. I am a government affairs director for two construction trade associations. I represent about 300 employers who live and work throughout Minnesota. But also as part of that, I am the board chair of the Construction Careers Foundation. That is the foundation that receives the money and operates the Helmets to Hard Hats program. I'm very proud of this program. It's not only helping get our veterans into apprenticeship programs, but as Justin and I have done since the beginning, we've pushed for helping veterans with mental health issues, including post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Justin, who is the director of the Helmets to Hard Hats program.
Next up is Justin Rost, Helmets to Hard Hats. Mr. Rost, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Rost. I am the director of the Minnesota Helmets to Hard Hats program. I'm also a Marine Corps veteran. I know there was a little ribbing going on there. Of 0311 Infantry. So I know what it's like firsthand to come home from a very structured environment and try and make your way in the civilian world and adapt and learn new skills, which unfortunately a lot of the skills that I brought home, other than the leadership and attention to detail and all the respect that I had learned through the military, I came home with not so many skills that I could turn into a workforce skill. Through bouncing around from different place to different place and really suffering the effects of financial instability, I know firsthand the effects that can have on a veteran's mental status as well as their family status. It wasn't until I found my way into the construction trades apprenticeship programs that I really found a place and found a home. That's where I found structure. That's where I found financial stability for my family and myself. And it gave me a path that had a beginning, had an end, and I knew what I had to do in between to get to it. That brought me a lot of peace of mind, and that's what this program does for other veterans. So we work with not only transitioning active duty military, but veterans of any age, of any era, National Guard members and reserves in this program. And what we do is we try and hand them that same playbook that I ended up taking. Not so much the going to college and trying all the different jobs, but finding their way into an apprenticeship program that can show them financial stability and move them on into a career path that they can have for the rest of their lives. In doing so, we also made a commitment, as Mr. Thaden said, to mental health. And so I've been working actively with many different groups in the veteran community, but one more than the others has been the Twin Cities Suicide Prevention Coalition that is founded by Jesse Pfau of the Minneapolis VA system. So we've been working along with their leadership to try and advance what the VA does. It's been a fairly reactive program, and we're turning it into a proactive program. This program has gotten a lot of a lot of attention from a lot of different groups. And I think that we've been very successful, as Jesse Pfau has now been moved up to a national level to bring this program across the entire U.S. So we can proudly say the Minneapolis veteran community has made changes that may affect the nationwide veterans' outlook on how they handle suicide prevention and outreach. So we've been an active part of that. Now, for the program itself, as far as helping veterans get into apprenticeship, I can share that we have almost 800 members, 800 veterans in our program, and that that number is important because since the Minnesota Helmets or Hard Hats got started, we've put more, or we've given veterans more information and helped them understand the pathway into apprenticeship than the 10 years prior to us not being here with the national program. This has been a hugely effective program with having skin in the game and our ability to reach out and talk to veterans one-on-one and get them interested in a construction careers pathway. As Representative Detmer had talked about, there are so many wonderful attributes to the apprenticeship programs. Being able to come out of them nearly debt-free or debt-free, an earn-as-you-learn program, they earn a respectable wage right out of the gate, and then they continue to do better and better. We do work with all of the construction trades, and that being vertical building construction and highway heavy. I'd like to end my testimony with a testimony of one of the veterans that we helped. When I met this veteran, he was living in veteran housing at the VA, and we were able to help him get into a career. And he wrote as follows in January. He wrote this, by the way. Hey, Justin, just wanted to inform you, if you didn't know already, as of January 2020, I was able to get into the elevator union. This has been the best thing that's ever happened to me, and I really enjoy this trade, and I just want to thank Helmets to Hard Hats for helping me get into this union. I've come so far since then. I purchased a house, brand new truck, and I'm living my life fully. Coming from homelessness, a life of drug use and crime, to now being sober and having my own house, I just wanted to thank you, especially for putting in the work, get me into this trade. Anything I could do to give back to you or give you a shout out, I definitely will do. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Rosh. Could we get Neil's last name by any chance for the record, since you read his letter on the
Yes, it's the Mays. Record?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rosh. Members, before we go to questions, we have an A1 amendment submitted by Representative Detmer. Representative Detmer, please move your amendment and explain.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move my A1 amendment.
Please proceed. And
members, and Mr. Chair and members, again, the Helmet to Hard Hats program is an outstanding program. It's been around for years. And also I'd like to thank Representative Frederick and possibly Justin Roast for the handout that you gave the committee, because that handout really gives us a good background about the program and some history. And Representative Frederick, where'd you get the handout? It's excellent. Where'd you get it?
Representative Frederick.
The materials that were provided to me are coming from the Helmets to Hard Hats groups. It's a great group to work with, and I've had a pleasure in getting to know them.
Okay.
Representative
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's excellent. What the A1 amendment does, it's the same amendment that I had last session. I would like to offer it. When the bill was heard in then Chair Sundin's Labor Committee 2 years ago, we heard testimony that the majority of the helmet hard hats existing at $400,000 appropriated went to two salaries of the employees. And, you know, the flags went up. When we questioned them about this expenses, asked for the budget details, the testifiers did not have all the details at the time and didn't make them available and could only provide vague estimates of some of the funding, where the funding went, and the office space and postage, et cetera. The A1 amendment requires the Construction Career Foundation to annually report to the legislature and Department of Labor. I know they already do, the Department of Labor, and the industry on the appropriation that we give them. The report must include an overview of the Helmets of Hard Hats program, the budget, the details explaining the expenditures, the number of veterans served, and a list of services provided and the details of the jobs the participants received. The amendment 2 years ago also required the breakdown in union jobs versus non-union jobs the participants received. My understanding that the Helmets of Hard Hats doesn't break that down, union and non-union jobs. So I did not include that in the A1 amendment. The legislature often mandates reporting when we fund a program. The support of our troops funds is an example of it. Chair Eklund, Rep. Sundin accepted the amendment last 2 years ago in the Veterans Committee, but it somehow disappeared and was not included in the language of the jobs omnibus bill. I just attribute that to clerical error. The public expects an accounting of our whether tax dollars are spent. I ask that you support the A1 amendment. It's the Helmets to Hard Hats program has been around for years, and I support it. But I think we need to look at this A1 amendment and that the reports will be coming back to the legislature, and as we do with other programs. So I hope to get that support. Thank you.
To the amendment, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Representative Detmert's interest in this topic and that this is something that he has carried in the past. And I also appreciate that he is supporting the bill now. I don't know if we necessarily need the amendment at this time. I know that this bill passed in the Senate already without the amendment language. I know that there's also, as Representative Detmer already stated, there's already reporting that takes place to Dolly along with financial details associated with the program. So I don't think this is something that we necessarily need to adopt at this time.
Representative Chair,
we just passed other bills this today that has requirements for reporting requirements. So I just don't understand why we wouldn't want to have a reporting requirement here. It just makes common sense. I guess we're the House representatives. We're not the Senate, and I think this is something that we should continue. And I require I'm asking for a roll call on this too. I think it's important that we include this in the bill.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the amendments author in support of this amendment, and I'm not sure how to do this, Mr. Chair, since we've got an amendment and an author to the amendment, but I want to go back to the original author. Is that okay, Mr. Chair?
Please proceed.
Thank you. To the original author, so just an example of why I think it's important that we get information like this, I took the report that was provided to us, and the only thing that was provided in this was a breakdown by quarter of personnel expenses. So Q3 2019 was at $41,300. I'm not even sure how many personnel that was, but I had heard previously that it was two, which is a breakdown quarterly of $20,650, which would be $6,883 monthly, or an hourly breakdown of $43.02. Now, I extrapolated that out to the projections into the 2023 fiscal year, but the only thing this gives me is an idea of a potential for an hourly rate on an unknown number of individuals working here. Exactly as Representative Detmer stated, I actually support this bill. I'm a veteran. I'm also disabled, and I'm service connected. I get it. I get it. I had a great conversation with Justin, and I want to support this, Representative Frederick. But without the reporting component, and I mean this as a question, not as a gotcha, how can we make good law if we can't figure out what the law does when many other organizations require reporting? I think it's a reasonable amendment. And with this amendment, I'd wholeheartedly support this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would actually like to invite either Mr. Thaden or Mr. Rose to talk about some of the reporting and how the impact that this would have on the bill.
Mr. Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As far as the reporting portion of it goes, the reporting of what jobs the individuals go to, we are not a placement agency. What we do is we assist them in getting into an apprenticeship. So we could certainly be able to report on what apprenticeship programs they go into in what fields. But we cannot tell what jobs specifically they go to. That is not something we report on. I don't know if Mr. Thaden has anything to add to this.
Mr. Thaden?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have before you the report that we provide to the Department of Labor and Industry that's on a November through October year, and we do that every year. It talks about all the different things that we do. The money that we receive from the legislature through the Department of Labor and Industry is a reimbursement. We only receive the money that we bill for. So the Department of Labor and Industry, we spend the money, we float the money, and then we submit the bills and the accounting through the Department of Labor and Industry, and they reimburse us for our expenditures for this program. That's how the money works, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Thaden, Mr. Ross. Any other comments on the amendment? Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Mr. Chair.
I don't know. You got to use your hand function so I know who's talking. It was Representative Detmer. Representative Detmer.
That's right. If you look at the amendment, let me just read it to the committee. In terms of the report, Construction Careers Foundation must report to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry and the chairs of the ranking members of the House and Senate committees overseeing labor, industry, policy, finance, and veterans affairs policy. The finance by January 15th of each year, the Helmets of Hardheads program. The report must include overview of the program's budget, details explanation of the program expenditures, the number of veterans, the service members served by the program, and a list of explaining the services provided to the program participants and details of the positions program participants assumed. So I'm addressing what Mr. Russ talked about. We're not asking for the exact job that they're going to be placed in, but the programs that they're assuming. So I think we solved that issue right there. And I think if we're going to be requesting a report for other programs, I think as a veteran myself of 25 years, I would support something like this, that if I'm going to be getting help and finding a job, I see no problem the organizations that's helping me to give a report to the legislature if that money is coming from the legislature. So I'm just asking you for your support. Thank you.
Ms. Doyle, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
No.
Eklund, no. Vice Chair Zhang.
No.
Zhang, no. Representative Detmer.
Yes.
Detmer, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
No.
Berg, no. Representative Bliss.
Yes.
Bliss, aye. Representative Edelson.
No.
Edelson, no. Representative Frederick.
No.
Frederick, no. Representative Greenman.
No.
Greenman, no. Representative Nelson.
No.
Nelson, no. Representative Poston.
Aye.
Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh, aye. Representative Sundin.
No.
Sundin, no. There are five ayes, eight nays.
Five ayes and eight nays. Amendment was not adopted. Member questions to the bill or comments? I'll go. Thank you, Representative Frederick, for bringing this bill to address the amendment. Representative Detmer, I would suggest, since this bill is being laid over, that you get with the committee, or not get with the committee, with the bill author, and see if you can work out language that'll work. So when we lay bills over, as most people know, they're still a work in progress, so it's being laid over for possible inclusion. Final comments on the bill, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a good bill. It's going to support our veterans in multiple different ways. And, you know, any conversations people would like to have to that extent, I'm happy to have those whenever.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. Representative Frederick renews his motion that House File 1794 be laid over possible inclusion on this bill. The bill is laid over. Next on the agenda, the final bill today, House File 1443, Vice Chair Zhang. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, sir. I would like to move House File. Sorry, I got a couple of bills coming up to me. House File 1443 for possible inclusion.
Representative Zhang moves that House File 1443 be laid over for possible inclusion. Please proceed with your bill, with your description.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. I'll be quick with this one. This is a bill seeking appropriation $300,000 from the general fund each year to the Department of Labor and Industry for costs in developing the competency standards for the pipeline dual training program. This program is jointly administered by DALI and the Office of Higher Ed. And, you know, last year I was on the higher education committee, and now this year I'm here. And it's just a program that I feel very strongly about. Representative Detmer talked about, you know, not every young adult needs or wants or can afford to go to a four-year college. I certainly know, you know, as a son of refugees, you know, growing up, you know, my parents were like, you know, I ran through war and death, and you better become a doctor or lawyer. So I ended up going to law school, right? But, you know, it's trying to let folks know that there are other opportunities out there. If you want to go to college, great, but, you know, there are other options that are available. And so the dual training pipeline program is just a great workforce training program for workforce development for our state. If you look by the numbers, you know, 2,323 industry leaders engaged in the Minnesota dual training pipeline, 1,800 dual trainees in pipeline training programs, 104 employers with pipeline programs associated with it, 56 occupations with industry improved competency standards, and 11 new occupations in development for 2021. And I also have Miss Annie Welch here that can answer any other additional questions that you might have in regards to this program, but it's a great program and I urge your support.
Ms. Welsh from I assume Department of Labor Industry, any comments, or are you just here for questions? Ms. Welsh, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Certainly. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Representative Zhang, and members of the committee. My name is Annie Welch. I direct the Projects and Planning Unit with the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry, which does include the Minnesota Dual Training Pipeline. Representative Zhang, you captured our metrics quite well. We are very proud of the Minnesota Dual Training Pipeline. The appropriation does go to support our agency in the development of competency standards, but also helps in developing the related instruction inventory, which we provide annually. Additionally, we host industry forums 3 to 4 times a year for each of our 4 industries of focus. The 4 industries are advanced manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, and agriculture. And as Representative Zhang mentioned, we have 67 occupations for which we've developed competency models with standards collaboratively with our industry leaders across the state. Additionally, we offer various enrichment events for our industry leaders, of which we have more than 2,300. This morning, we offered a speaker series featuring an expert in the development of mentorship programs, Dion Clark, and that was very well attended and well received. So I'm certainly available for any questions you might have, and thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. Member questions? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair, and for the author, does this bill require any reporting to the legislature?
Representative Zhang, Vice Chair Zhang.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Not through the language of the bill itself, but from Dolly and OAG, I think Ms. Welch can answer some of the reporting requirements that goes with this.
Ms. Welch.
Certainly, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We do provide, and as required by statute, an annual update to our related instruction inventory, which is required in the statute that we provide that and update it every year. We work collaboratively with the Office of Higher Education and our education partners to make sure that's as updated as possible. And then additionally, the program that runs in tandem with the dual training pipeline, the one administered by the Office of Higher Education, that's the dual training grant program, they also provide an annual report to the legislature each year reporting on outcomes for that grant funding.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair. And I, that's just proven my point that the last bill that we didn't put an amendment on, AA1 amendment, it just makes my point that reporting needs to be done, how you spend the money, whether it's to Dolly or to the legislature, that needs to be done. Just common sense. If you ask any people out there that if we're going to be providing funds for a program, that a report should come back to the legislature, because we're the ones that provide the funding, the taxpayers' funding, because it comes from the taxpayer. It's not our money. So thank you.
Any other comments, questions? Representative Vice Chair Zhang, any final remarks?
No, I hope you can get all your support once this goes through. And thank you, Ms. Annie Welch, for taking the time to join us here today.
Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 1443 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. Members and staff, our next meeting is Friday, March 19th, 2021 at 10:30. Anybody have any questions or comments? Thank you. We're adjourned.